Now, the British woman Nazanin Zaghari-Ratcliffe, who is in prison in Iran, has started a three-day hunger strike in protest against being denied specialist medical care. She's serving a five-year jail sentence after being accused of spying by the Iranian authorities, a charge she denies. The British government's repeatedly called for her release. The Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt has summoned the Iranian ambassador to discuss the issue.
Happy hump day. Michael Malice here with a fresh dose of nightshade for you to enjoy while the government is shut down. First things first, I do want to thank Steve Torelli, who does such a great job with Photoshops for this show and so many of the other shows, and a mediocre job with some of the other shows, for my new mug with my hero, Bobby the Brain Heenan, on it. So it's very much appreciated. So that's the good news. And the first story, this is really something I'm not enjoying reporting, and it is not fun or funny at all. We got news from Radar Online about Artie Lang. Radar Online has covered Artie extensively. They've got they're talking to the right people. So if they're writing it, you can kind of take it to the bank, is my understanding. Artie has relapsed, according to them, and those closest to him are worried he could die. And this is directly from a friend of Artie's to radaronline.com. I hate reporting stories like this because I don't know what to say. I mean, let's just put it out there. Artie's 50, and he just told Radar last month he was getting better and was weeks sober. But this insider claims Artie is now in, quote, self-destruction mode. And that's by Artie standards, which is no joke. The troubled comic is expected to appear in drug court on January 30th. That would actually be a good daytime show where, like, everyone's on drugs. For a hearing, and the insider admitted Artie is terrified at what could happen. Quote, he knows he won't survive drug court, so he's going to party as much as he can until he gets thrown in jail or a year-long rehab. Even his sponsors from the retreat know that he's partying, even though he's denying it. The insider also alleged Artie is getting personal deliveries of drugs sent directly to him at his New Jersey condo. As the insider revealed, as some of you may have seen, Richard Lewis, the comedian, reached out to Artie on Twitter begging him to get clean. And the guy says, you know, if Artie's tweeting at 4 a.m., he's high. Unlike me, who tweets at 2 a.m. because he's lonely. This wouldn't be the first time Artie's relapsed. As Radar previously reported, Artie has been in and out of the hospital several times due to drug-related incident issues. And in November, he broke his probation when he tested positive for drugs the month previously. According to the assistant prosecutor from Essex County, he tested positive twice in October, thus violating his probation. The first time he tested for cocaine and opioids, and the second time was for cocaine and oxy. And during his last court hearing, just over a month ago, December 14th, Artie appeared in front of a judge to face his fate. He also failed another last-minute drug test taken in court when cocaine was found in his system. And let me give you guys a little bit of a history lesson. If you don't remember, the reason Artie was kicked off the Howard Stern show was he had a suicide attempt where he was stabbing himself in the stomach with, like, a knife or a sword. So if he's in self-destruct mode, and this is according to a close friend, this is very disturbing. I don't have any other comment, really. It's just really unfortunate and so on, like that. Now for some better news. Speaking of, I don't have a segue here. Nancy Pelosi had a few interesting things to say. Ooh, I like that picture. I like that one. Good work. Good work, team, for once. Nancy Pelosi had some they're just too busy eating my cereal and throwing up my tentacles. Nancy Pelosi had some interesting words to say. Yeah, here's the video in its entirety.
About all of the resources that are needed to prepare for a State of the Union address, which he calls what a special, an event of special security. And so these people are not working, and we've never really had a State of the Union when government has been in a shutdown since the Budget Act in the 70s. Yes. So this is respectfully and sadly, proudly, I invited him to come.
Right.
It was a privilege to invite him to come.
I pressure Bush, but...
The government to shut down the people who are, that we would have the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, the entire Congress of the United States, House and Senate, the Supreme Court, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Cabinet of the United States,
all the King's horses and all the King's men,
and the diplomatic corps, all in the same room. This is and requires hundreds of people working on the logistics and the security of it. Most of those people are either furloughed or victims of the shutdown, the president's shutdown. But that isn't the point. The point is security.
Yeah.
And I, as having been in the leadership a long time, have been maybe before you were all here, where they we have so prepared in advance for something happening in that chamber. Actually, this room, HR 5, if you look back at the history of it, rather than my giving it to you, was turned into sort of a safe haven while they bring us all down here if something happened in the chamber. This is a very big deal. It is a special security event.
If you were to insist on coming,
would you host him? So, despite the Grandpa Simpson rambling of what you just saw there, that's pretty transparent bullshit. I mean, the idea that somehow, because the government is shut down, it's not entirely shut down, she's saying that the State of the Union is canceled because the Secret Service is not going to be able to keep everyone safe. Right. So it was scheduled for the 29th. She's saying she's canceling this. Let me give you guys briefly history of the State of the Union. According to the Constitution, the president has to update Congress. It used to be in writing. Woodrow Wilson changed it so he's addressing them in person directly. There's absolutely no reason it has to be in person. And as I tweeted out earlier, there's absolutely no reason why President Trump can't just say it through a McDonald's speaker, which would actually be more coherent and easier to understand than that speaker. So after rejecting invitations earlier in the week, according to the Federalist, to renegotiate for funding for border security, she sent a letter to the president implying he would not be welcome to address the American people. Technically, the State of the Union, you're addressing Congress. That's the constitutional role, not the people. In her letter, she cited security concerns and lamented that Secret Service and Department of Homeland Security have not been funded for 26 days, with critical departments hamstrung by furloughs. And the majority leader, Cindy Hoyer from Maryland, said there's nothing the president can do to change the speaker's mind. Uh-huh. Right. Yep, the speaker is the one who invites the president to speak at a joint session, he said. And she has said, as long as government is shut down, we're not going to be doing business as usual. The State of the Union is off. If things happen, as Pelosi says now, it would mark the first time that an annual address will not be sent to Congress since 1790. That's inaccurate, because he can still mail them an address. So the Federalist doesn't. It's ironic that a site called The Federalist doesn't know what the hell they're talking about. But the Daily Caller adds, Dan Bonino, who was former secret agent and was the guy who discussed on Joe Rogan, who's not black but looks black. Can you pull him up? B-O-N-G-I-N-O. B-O-N-G-I-N-O. And Bonino was his name-o. He's some kind of Southern Italian. He's former Secret Service agent. He told the Daily Caller that she owes the Secret Service an apology, and that the shutdown has nothing to do with agency readiness. So let me remind something else. When Hillary Clinton, 2008, was campaigning for the White House, and she had said that she was under sniper fire in Bosnia or Serbia, whichever one it was, and everyone's like, okay, she's a nasty liar. The thing people forget is, what kind of fucking Secret Service would let a first lady be under sniper fire overseas? Think about it in those terms, it's absolutely no sense. Do you have a picture, Dan? Yeah, he's not black. Is that amazing?
What? He's like kind of black.
No, he's a moop, but that's about it. And the lapel pin should be at an angle, Dan. Let's get it together. Anyway, he said, and he knows what he's talking about, the timing of their paychecks will have absolutely zero impact on their security plan. If Pelosi thinks the agents are going to put the president in danger because they've missed the paycheck, then she should find a new line of work. The Secret Service is owed an apology by her for being unnecessarily put in the middle of this. They are patriots, not politicians. Keep in mind, these are people whose job and who are trained to take a bullet for the president, and they do it. I don't know why, but they do it. He also tweeted that this was a story that she had fabricated in order to hurt Trump. And the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen tweeted Wednesday afternoon today, "The Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Secret Service are fully prepared to support and secure the State of the Union. We thank the service for their mission, focus, and dedication, and for all they do each day to secure our homeland." It's also kind of funny to have this idea that they just started planning this now. Even though it's like every year, this is like their big thing. Like, you got all the people in that room, as she correctly pointed out. Actually, what's interesting is one member of the cabinet is held in some safe location elsewhere in case, like, someone nukes the Capitol. Like, they actually take it that seriously and have that many contingency plans. So the idea that, like, it'd be like, well, you know, some people who are climate change scientists aren't getting their paychecks, so basically, it's okay if the president, let alone Nancy Pelosi and the Supreme Court, gets shot. Not my job anymore. That's not how it works. So I don't know where this is going to land, but it's pretty darn funny to watch. A quick update on two stories from yesterday. In Sweden, the left party, the communists, said they would abstain on Friday's vote, but also issued a threat that they would not attempt to topple the government should it, that they would attempt to topple the government should it try to carry through its claimed plans to ease rent regulation and to loosen labor market rules. But for that, they would team up with the Sweden Democrats, the Nationalists, and the Conservative Moderates, which are basically the equivalent of the Republicans, who are now also out in the cold. So Sweden does have a new government, but it looks like it's not going to be a very stable one. And of course, I will be keeping an eye on this and in the days to come. And if there's one thing that citizens love, is when they vote for change and all the parties in the establishment cut a deal to make sure that change doesn't happen. It'll never blow up in their face in the future. Now, this is other major, major news today. This is from the New York Times, Theresa May. So she narrowly survived a vote of no confidence today. But the result did little to stop the turmoil that's gripping the British government, and it came a day after she suffered that historic defeat yesterday on the blueprint for Brexit. The House of Commons Parliament voted 325 to 306 to reject an opposition motion of no confidence. Fun fact, I googled today the term tabled, and it's the only word that I know of in English where it has the complete opposite meaning in American English as in British English. So in British English, when they say the Labour Party tabled this motion, they mean the Labour Party put this motion forward for discussion. Whereas here we say, let's table this agenda, we mean let's not discuss it at all. So it's very, very confusing, and I would love to know the etymological evolution of that term and how that came to be, but that's where we are. So when they're talking about tabling, they mean putting it forward to discuss. Anyway, if successful, it would have ousted her from power, this vote of no confidence, and would have forced a general election, which would have added even more layers of uncertainty as the March 29th date for leaving the EU quickly approaches. And on Monday, this coming Monday, Theresa May is required to return to Parliament with proposals on how she intends to proceed. That's really interesting. That basically they're like, you have to tell us how you're going to negotiate. That's really intriguing. And that gives lawmakers an opportunity to add alternative suggestions, including a customs union or a second referendum or something like that. Those could be all voted on as soon as next week. And it'll give some indication if there's any sign of a consensus among lawmakers. And there's problems looming for Jeremy Corbyn, who's the leader of the opposition, because he's failed in his attempt to secure another election, and he'll be under pressure to endorse plans for a second Brexit referendum. We'll just keep voting until we get the result we want, and then we'll say that's the one that counts. I mean, that's the strategy here. But he's been a lifelong critic of the EU. So he's resisted calls for a second referendum. And on Wednesday, today, 71 Labour lawmakers gave their support to the campaign. Do you know what they're calling it? The people's vote. He's not a Stalinist, trust me. Her one card, the one card she has to play, is that her opponents are focused on an array of contradictory objectives, which means that over 2.5 years after Brexit, the Brexit vote, the politicians have failed to reach even remotely any consensus as to what that is going to mean in real life. And many conservative critics want to scrap a key part of her agreement, which is called a backstop proposal. What does that mean? That means, you know, Ireland is split because Northern Ireland's part of the UK, and then you have Ireland proper, which is its own country. The backstop proposal would allow goods to flow across that Irish border after Brexit, even though Ireland would be in the EU, I believe, and Northern Ireland and the UK would be out of the EU. So this would keep the whole, effectively, of the UK tied to European customs rules, unless they have some agreement on a detailed trade deal that would remove the need for frontier checks. But the EU has rejected that proposal. So things are bad for what's going to happen. I don't even know where to go from this. It's also really funny. There was an article that was saying that Britons are laughing stock. And the deputy editor of Breitbart UK pointed out, goes, Sweden took 4 months to form a government. Angela Merkel is a mess. France is on fire. So it's chaos. He didn't even bring up the Czech Republic where, you know, I told that story with Babich's son said his father kidnapped him and held him hostage, the prime minister's son. So there's Looney Tunes on every channel. And I don't know where we go from here. Both.
Michael.
Yeah.
Well, one thing is, I think the sponge is falling over there.
Oh, well, we don't like to give it a name. We just say co-host.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
So now people know what it is. Because there's a lot of people who start watching the show and they're like, what is that, a meteorite? God damn it. There we go. And then I never explain it to them.
Everything's going to get better in the world just because the sponge is moving again.
Well, you just did it again. Jesus fucking Christ. Hey, Garrett. Garrett, yeah, it's happening. When can you get here? All right.
Be right there, boss.
Fuck, that was good. He sounds like Kevin from The Office. The last story and this... Oh, let me just do a side note. I did talk a little bit with Gavin McInnes. And I'm not trying to break any confidences. The point is... Gavin has enough on his plate. So if you are someone who's a fan of his, thank you, and you feel the need to kind of update him on shit talking, he's worried about his family. So maybe you think you're helping him, or maybe people think that, oh, this is my chance to have an excuse to contact them and kind of help. It's making it worse. So have a little bit of empathy for someone who's been made a pariah by a lot of very nefarious people. And one of those very nefarious people, one of those organizations, is the SPLC, and that's what we're talking about now. I was very glad to hear this story earlier today, that one of the prominent groups advocating for strict, this is from the Washington Times, advocating for stricter immigration went to court today to demand a judge order them, the SPLC, which has nothing to do with South Poverty Law or the Center, to stop labeling it a hate group, accusing the self-described watchdog of running an illegal racket to silence political opponents. This is a very, very big deal. As I've discussed in the show before, what the SPLC does is they allow the evangelical left to outsource their blacklisting and ostracism. Because then any article could say, well, they're a hate group according to the SPLC. We're not saying it. This group with a very nice objective sounding name, and this is also how many of the communist front groups worked in like the 30s and 40s. They would be like Center for Peace and Prosperity. It's like, what, you're against peace and prosperity? It's like, no, this is funded by Moscow. It's like they just have a banal name. That's what they do all the time. It's an effective strategy. So the Center for Immigration Studies, and this is also the same thing here. This is obviously an anti-immigrant group, but they're calling themselves, oh, immigration studies. We're just looking at it, just taking a look. So the Center for Immigration Studies says the SPLC's accusations of being racist and immigrant and anti-immigrant are not only wrong, but they've cost the nonprofit support and financial backing by scaring people away from doing business with the center. CIS brought its challenge in federal court in Washington, D.C., filing a civil complaint under RICO, which is the anti-mob law, against SPLC President Richard Cohen and Heidi Beirich, who run the group's Hate Watch blog. Hate Watch. Mark Akorian, who's the CIS's executive director. I got to look him up. Because he's a smart dude. I got to get him on. You're welcome. Says his organization doesn't meet the SPLC's very own definition of a hate group. And that the Alabama-based group knows it and persists anyway, which he says is evidence of the racket. As he put it, SPLC and its leaders have every right to oppose our work on immigration, but they do not have the right to label us a hate group and suggest that we are racists. The Center for Immigration Studies is fighting back against the SPLC smear campaign and its attempt to stifle debate through intimidation and name-calling. This is wonderful. The CIS isn't the only group to protest their use of this hate tag, but it appears to be the first to mount a challenge under RICO, which is usually more associated with the FBI's anti-mob efforts. CIS says SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, defines hate groups as organizations whose official statements or activities, quote, attack or malign an entire class of people, typically for their immutable characteristics, end quote. Mr. Kerkorian said that doesn't match his group, whose motto is pro-immigrant, low immigration. And, of course, being an immigrant is not an immutable characteristic, obviously. He says in practice, that motto means CIS makes the case for fewer immigrants, but a warmer welcome for those admitted. And let's also point out, if his organization was just no immigrants, that's also not a hate group. I ran a Twitter poll and I said, which are you more worried about? Muslim immigration, Mexican immigration, both or neither, or I don't care where they come from? And by far the biggest answer was number four. I was very surprised because this was an anonymous poll. So I thought there would be, you know, some prejudice one way or another. I was like, no. So that was surprising. Obviously, it wasn't very scientific, but revelatory. CIS says it doesn't think its work amounts to attacks on people, but rather an attempt to raise policy questions. Absolutely. Beyond that, the Supreme Court has held that being – they already have legal backing. The Supreme Court has already held that being an immigrant isn't an immutable characteristic, so maligning migrants wouldn't qualify anyway. And CIS's work is – yeah, they're very respected. It's widely cited in the press, including the Washington Times. It issues awards for press coverage of immigration, including in the past to the Washington Times. Experts are regularly called to testify before Congress. And they've been invited to meet with top Homeland Security officials in both the Obama and the Trump administration. Their work is also used by self-appointed fact-checkers such as PolitiFact.com, which in 2017 fact-checked the SPLC's hate designation. And PolitiFact concluded that most of the evidence was guilt by association. See, this is where I part company with – not part company. Like a lot of people, these like ostensibly pro-free market conservatives, they're very, very big on regulation. And I think this is a much smarter approach because regulation, things get swept under the rug. Here, this is public and they have to publicly provide answers and explain themselves. And this is something that anyone could understand. You're calling us a hate group. This is your designation of a hate group. This is the consequences we're having. You're lumping us in with the Klan. And you're being called a liar by PolitiFact, which has nothing to do with us. What's your answer? So that is much better than regulate and force people to do things. So under the Trump administration, CIS's profile has grown. And some former staffers were even hired by the government. CIS experts have also conducted interviews with top Homeland Security officials. So, Joe Crowley, who was then at the point House Democratic Committee chairman, fired off a note last year urging the chief of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to cancel an appearance saying CIS, quote, spreads abhorrent viewpoints, including white supremacism and anti-Semitism. And Mr. Cohen had this SPLC in a statement to the Times said CIS richly deserves the hate group label and looks forward to battling the group in court. He says it has a history of making racially inflammatory statements, associating with white nationalists, and circulating the work of racist writers. None of those things are a hate group. If you make a racially inflammatory statement, you're not a hate group. If you're associating with white nationalists, that term has no meaning, especially the term white nationalist nowadays. Everyone in Congress, if they're calling Steve King, who's currently a congressman, a white nationalist, then everyone in Congress is associating with white nationalists. And circulating the work of racist writers. I mean, the founding fathers were racist. If you're going to forward the Federalist, yeah, they're being so hazy here that this is how it works, the art of smearing. He says, its lawsuit is nothing more than a heavy-handed effort to try to silence us from exercising our First Amendment right to express our opinion. The First Amendment doesn't cover slander. SPLC says the center made the list. You made the list in 2016 after circulating a weekly reading list that sometimes linked to white nationalist and anti-Semitic writers. Uh-oh. Oh, my God, this reading list sometimes had links to... I'm sure a lot of these writers were also dead. And by commissioning work from a former Heritage Foundation employee who the SPLC said had been ousted for his embrace of racist pseudoscience. So they hired someone... If you hire someone who embraced racist pseudoscience, you're a hate group? That's not a hate group. Mr. Krikorian, they said, while capable of appearing as a sober-minded policy analyst in some settings... Longtime CIS executive director Mark Krikorian's contributions to the immigration policy debate rarely rise above petulant commentary dashed with extremist statements. That's projecting. Petulant commentary? You're a hate group. If you're going to judge everyone as a Klansman or as a Nazi, that is a bit of an extremist statement. Among other evidence the SPLC lists in its 8,000-word write-up is CIS's support for E-Verify, which is the federal government's current, it's a federal government program to let businesses check their workers' legal status. So if you support a federal government program, you're a hate group. And E-Verify was spoken of glowingly just this month by noted white supremacist and anti-Semite Chuck Schumer, who is the Senate Minority Leader. The SPLC tried to cast it in a more nefarious light, saying it was the linchpin of the anti-immigrant movement. Perhaps most damning for the SPLC is CIS's association with John Tanton, who they call a racist. CIS counters that it's independent of Mr. Tanton. The SPLC cut its teeth on taking on the Klan in the 70s, but in recent years, the group has become a major player in questions of Muslims' rights, and it's expanded its list of haters to include groups that may have taken controversial stands, but that had generally not been accused of racism. Last year, they had to pay $3.4 million to Ayan Ali, Ayan Hassan Ali, I'm bungling her name, God forbid the article include it, because the group had included her among anti-Muslim extremists. Mr. Cohen issued a statement in June acknowledging they botched that one. Oops. Part of the problem is the group's increasing forays into activism, which can build tension with its longstanding role as a clearinghouse for immigration. So this is the group. I remember I was here. I don't remember when it was. And they had issued a brochure, I think it was. And they had the alt-right and the alt-light. And basically, this was like a hit list. And they had Gavin. It had Molyneux. It had Lauren Southern, I believe. I know it had Cernovich on it and a few other people. And it was basically saying these people need to – not so many words, but you can read it. You know what they meant. These people are bad. And they're the ones behind this whole the big ones behind this whole thing on Gavin. So having these simultaneous lawsuits – are going to be really, really interesting because both Gavin and the CIS have a very vested interest in having them back away. And it also is going to be very interesting to see, you know, in discovery, all sorts of internal documents about where they got this idea and how they're making decisions about who's a hate group and who's not. And again, if you're being told we're not a hate group and you're still persisting, that is intent. And that is, and so they're gonna have to say what we don't know that it's gonna cause harm. They know it causes harm, and then they have to pretend we did it anyway, or it's the truth. This is very, very, I think, on the other hand, if they get a lefty judge, who knows what's going to happen. But I'd be very curious to see what happens with this organization. And on that note, I hate you, but I love Sweet Dreams.
Girl, I hope they don't have diabetes. You look really familiar.